step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 689. My name today is Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my stalwart, beautiful, and intelligent co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we do in October on KOOP.org.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Don't tell me not to live, just sit.
It is a Wednesday, October 5th, 2022, on the show today. We have the Morgan Theater Company and their show, Matt and Ben. And later on, we'll be talking to Gaslight Baker Theater and their production of Blithe Spirit. And we will have lots of talk and views about the world of theater in Chicago, Austin, New York, San Antonio, Dubuque, Des Moines, and Marshalltown. Don't go away.
I guess I didn't make it, but whether on the rose of sheer perfection, a freckle on the nose.
Everything's like butter, if you ask me. It's like butter.
Like butter.
Like butter.
Butter, butter, butter.
Well, first of all, before we talk about that song.
I like butter.
Well, who doesn't like butter? Everything's better with butter.
Another reason why I gained the weight. It's not just the chocolates. I'll blame it on the butter.
Well, you know, I gave butter completely up for like 15 years. Like 100% gone.
Really?
Yeah.
And how was that? Current?
No, God, no. Okay. God,
but
no.
I've gone out to eat with her, and I both bathe in that together.
I went to a French culinary school. There is no avoiding butter. Nicole, first of all, welcome back. We missed you last week.
Thank you.
And we're happy to have you back. It's always not the same. I flew solo last week.
You did?
I did.
No one came here to play with you?
Well, I overbooked. We had three guests on.
It wasn't difficult.
It was a fun format. I mixed up all the talking of things throughout the entire hour.
Because you're cool like that.
I'm cool like that. Let's introduce the folks that are sitting here within the studio.
You're cool people.
You just
too.
Heard her voice, Amber Quick, the indomitable. I don't know what that word
Abominable.
Is. The incredible Amber Quick. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon, world.
And then Kim Stacy. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
I just caught Kim in the middle of clearing their throat.
It's fine. I could have been doing something else.
And Callie Sykes. Hi, Callie.
Hello.
So y'all, did y'all recognize? Well, I'm assuming you recognized the song. Did you recognize the singer?
Was that Rachel?
Yes, it was. It was Lea Michele. And funny you should say that because I pulled that off of a recording of Glee.
Yeah.
because they haven't done, and if they do the cast album, I don't think it will be with her. Although, if it were up to the critics, it would be with her.
Mm-hmm.
So the New York Times.
They've been known to do more than one cast album with some peeps.
They have, but usually not within the first year of.
No, but nothing is normal or
that's true.
The same anyway. So why not keep shaking it up?
This is true. Rules. Well, the New York Times, and I'm sure others, but I only read the New York Times because that's, you know, that's me. Jesse Green re-reviewed Funny Girl with Lea Michele in it, and it appears that Lea Michele was the missing factor.
Hmm. Yes.
Everybody
so
has
say.
Said great things about her. As a matter of fact, right after she went on one of the blogs I read, Onstage Blog, I just was looking through the headlines, and it said something. It made it sound like they were going to say bad things about Lea Michele, but when you went back into it, they said, oh my God, no, she was like really good in this show. So, you know, regardless what you think about her personally.
Hey, someone said it reminds you that the script has some issues because she's so good. Was that in the Times one?
That was in the Times, but not because she was so good, just because she can't fix those script issues.
Yes.
Right. But to refresh our memory, and we've talked about this on the show, Funny Girl was written for Barbara Streisand. Mm. And if you don't have those kind of pipes, you're just not going to make it.
We call that c'est difficile.
We call it what?
It's difficult.
Oh, say difficult. You were speaking French. So what I find funny in Jesse Green's review, he said he's talking about the books by Isabel Lennart. He says it seems to have been assembled from a warehouse of used musical comedy parts. They do not work well together, however well they work individually. She just
used musical theater parts. I kind of really like that and think I may take that and use it again.
The sketch is
let's make that happen.
Itself.
Yeah.
You
the land of musical theater parts. Please write Lisa and I into that.
Well, we had lots of openings this week. Two on Broadway, one off Broadway that we're going to talk about. And the one on Broadway that we spoke of either last week or a couple weeks ago, finally opened, and that's Leopoldstadt by Tom.
I think we talked about it a couple of times. So
yes, yeah, we have talked about it. Well, because we talked about it pre
pre opening, pre happening,
no, pre COVID, I believe.
Yes, I believe it's been happening.
I believe it's been that long, but it opened in the Did They Like It website. It got 12 thumbs up, 1 thumbs down, and 2. And it opened on Sunday at the Long Acre Theater. And it takes place in, well, it was written by Tom Stoppard. I guess I should say that. And it's largely...
I like the Tom.
He likes you, he told me.
Yes.
It's largely, it's not autobiographical, but it talks about his family. He lost all 4 of his grandparents in the concentration camps.
Oh, wow.
In the Holocaust. And his name, actually, just, you know, he was part of the way many people, many Jews assimilated. And his name, he was born Tomas Strasuler. And he changed it. So this basically follows two families through from 19 or 18 something to 1955. It takes place 1889 to 1955. It takes place in 5 acts.
Wow.
In each,
a mere 5 acts.
A mere 5 acts. But here's the deal, folks. Remember, just because it's 5 acts doesn't mean it's 4 intermissions.
Yes, yes, right.
That's it's only one intermission. And as a matter of fact, one of the reviews that I read said they really could have added an intermission after Act 2. I don't know what that means, but that's what they said, so I'm just repeating it. But each
I'm
of these...
I'm going to say one act is longer than the other.
I'm going to say that, but don't act up. So this was directed by Patrick Marber, and it's a huge cast. It's got like 20-some-odd people in the cast. It this is a straight play. A
lot of people for one play.
And the only name I knew offhand was Brandon Uranowitz. Everybody got good reviews. The critic, and let me see if it's Jesse or not. It is Jesse Green. It said the acting is excellent across the board with too many standouts to name. So he doesn't name any names in this review for actors.
That's always a bit heartbreaking when they're like, it was too good. And so then no one gets to pull.
Yeah, nobody gets to pull anything.
Great ensemble.
But you could pull it up at yourself. You were too good.
Yeah.
They left them speechless. They couldn't write your name.
But it's interesting. It shows these families over this those periods of years and ends in 1955. And it seems very poignant at the end for this family in 1955 to know they sort of like gave up on their Jewishness to save their own lives, which many, many Jews did not do. Interesting. Sounds like something I want to see.
Yeah.
And actually, when I heard about it the first time, I said, this sounds like something that I could do at my theater. It seems right up my alley. But, you know, 24 actors? I don't think so.
Yeah, I was about to say,
we would break the
amount
budget.
Of actors would be like, woo.
Yeah. So some
unless
of the,
someone wants to kindly produce.
That's true. Yeah, if you want. Some of the other critics, Broadway News' Deep Tran said, while Leopoldstadt is epic, it is also quietly affecting, taking time to focus on the minutiae of these characters' daily lives. Did they like it? Ranz Zha said, a production of superb clarity and nuance with director Patrick Marber at the helm, running a smooth and tight ship with a massive ensemble of immense talent, each expertly telling this difficult yet extraordinarily intimate story of confronting one's own identities in the shared generation and shared generational. And finally, Time, the Wrap's Robert Hoffler said, needs more time to, this is the one that was like maybe not in the middle, or in the middle, needs more time to let its drama play out effectively, even at its present condensation. The production could use an intermission after Act Two. I told you I read that somewhere. There it is. So that's Leopoldstadt. Sounds like, so by a show of hands, who wants to go see it?
I believe that's so everyone.
It's everyone. The other thing that opened on Broadway was Cost of Living. And this looks fascinating. This is written by Martina Mayock. And she wrote Sanctuary Cities, which coincidentally is being done at Ground Floor Theater next year. But I didn't say that. I just got the stink eye. Anyway, so this is it's amazing. So 15 critics, 14 thumbs up, one in the middle, zero down. And I will read this. This won the Pulitzer in 2018. It was downtown at MTC before. I thought it had a synopsis, but it doesn't. It's just a New York Times quotable quote. Let's see what I said. So this opened on Monday night, the Samuel Friedman Theater. And it just covers two sets of caregivers. One person whose wife died, and then it goes immediately into flashback when she had just had an accident and he's caring for her. And then the other is a woman that's taking care of a man with cerebral palsy. This is directed by Joe Bonnie, and kudos across the board for everybody. I should say, so they don't really list the actors. You have to go through and look at everything. I thought it underlined everybody's names, but I didn't. Katie Sullivan. David Zayas. You have to go and look and see what the... Anyway, and then two others. I'm terrible. I'm gonna come up with it at some point. But it alternates between these two stories of the two caregivers. And they just, again, every performer, nobody was a standout. Everybody was great. And again, they don't get the quotable quote. Because
even with four people?
Everybody
That's
was good.
That's what I was thinking. There's four people.
Yeah. Yeah. Four names.
We're talking like 80 characters at most.
But one of the things Mayock does is she does it in a lot of her shows, and she calls out specific things. In this case, it was is using actors with disabilities in these roles. Mm-hmm. They don't specifically say it, but I'm guessing that the person in the accident was an amputee in a wheelchair, and that the person with cerebral palsy actually had cerebral palsy. I pronounced it both ways. But I'm going to read...
English of you.
This was Maya Phillips who did this. Let me make sure I'm not lying, because I do that a lot. It is indeed Maya Phillips. I just want to read this last three paragraphs, because they're sort of beautiful. Last two paragraphs. This play left me breathless, and I'm not just using a matter of speech. As I made my way through the crowd of people exiting the theater, I took hard, shallow breaths, knowing that one deep inhale could set off a downpour of tears. This production either broke or mended something in me. I felt brilliantly, painfully, cathartically near the point of physical exhaustion. It seems if tears, the chuckles, the full body ache of feeling is the currency of an outstanding work of art. We gave nearly 2 hours attention, and great theater offers us empathy and humanity in return, riches of which even the world's wealthiest can only dream.
Hmm.
Isn't that beautiful? I mean,
it's beautiful.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes me cry.
She's my
radio.
New favorite critic. She's got some good words, and of course,
who is that?
Maya Phillips.
Maya Phillips, okay.
Writing for the Times. Mm. Some other critics. Let's see. I think I have some. Yep. Broadway News' Brittany Samuel said, a masterfully managed story of class, privilege, ability, and shame. Overt sentimentality never rears its head in Mayock's script. Mm. And that's because cost of living is as much about the efficiency and wholeness of the spirit as it is of the body.
Wow. Interesting.
Wow. Interesting. Did they like it? Christian Lewis said the disabled characters are well written and well rounded after a major moment in Broadway history, which is valid. I mean, it just mm-hmm. doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. The Wrap's Robert Hoffler said Mazgala and Sullivan repeat their tough, resilient performances as patients. They're ultimately sympathetic because they never beg for our sympathy.
Oh, I like that too. Oh.
That I mean, that okay. makes
me I don't need to take a poll of this one.
Yeah.
No, I'm already. Take my money.
We're not going to talk about this, but the third show that opened was called This Beautiful Future. It was off-Broadway. Another really amazing review. Everything was really super-duper positive about it. And so you go to offstageonair.com and you will link you to the Did They Like It page. Or you can just go to Did They Like It. And what I find interesting, Did They Like It, usually I get email alerts for the Broadway shows and the Broadway shows only. But this one was not a Broadway show,
and I
still got an alert. I actually had to go back and look at it and see whether indeed it was
off for regular.
Yeah. So great. That's it. Not great, but that's it. one real quick sad piece of news is that we lost Charles Fuller. I think he was 80 some odd years old. He wrote A Soldier's Play, which then, of course, was a soldier story. And finally, after 30 some odd years after it's written, it made it to Broadway in 2020, I think.
I think it was open and then closed with the pandemic and opened
right.
again.
Maybe.
It was one of those. Mm-hmm.
He won the Pulitzer for this in...
had the David Alan Greer in it.
1982, yes.
And the... Jerry O'Connell and
yep.
some folks.
Oh. He's the second black playwright to win the Pulitzer for drama. Wow. The first one was Edward Gordon for his 1970s No Place to Be Someone.
I love that he got to see his work
yeah.
put back out. Like, yeah. you know, like mm-hmm. that's what a gift before passing.
Yep.
It still is a loss. I'm not.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not saying that.
All right, we're running out of time. There's two things I want to talk about for fun. One is One Schubert Alley. And this is actually something I'd been meaning to talk about for a long time, and I'm glad that I didn't because it just changed.
I was like, because more stuff yeah. happened.
So does anybody not know about One Schubert Alley, hear what it is? Mm. So Schubert Alley is the alley between the Booth Theater and the Schubert Theater, and it had a little Broadway gift shop. And it was called One Schubert Alley. And that's where you went to go get your keychains and your posters and your other
swag.
Your swag.
From the theater.
So 2 weeks ago, we got notice that it was going to close on October 2nd. Oh. And they didn't know what was going to go in there and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But that was, I wanted to talk about it because what a shame. You know, and you know, it's prime real estate. It's tiny. It was smaller than the studio.
But it's magical.
But now it's back.
Oh, good. Oh. It was gone and it is back.
It's gone and it's back. And I'm going to leave it at that because I want to talk about these two other things before we go on to our break. And this is something, and I think that I may be the only one here that has this opinion of this particular piece because... Hocus Pocus. Does everybody love Hocus Pocus?
Oh, you're speaking to my soul.
Yeah. Okay. So not of my generation. It's well after me. So I finally saw it for the first time last year and I hated it. I mean, there was, to me, there was nothing good about it. Like
amazing.
Zero.
I love it.
Hot takes from Lisa Schiff.
I know.
I love
well,
it.
I would challenge somebody to look at it with contemporary eyes and tell me what's good about it because I don't see it. I never really thought of me doing hot takes, but this is absolutely one of them. But I didn't like that. Midler's performance, I did not like anything. There was nothing I liked about it. And so...
Me neither.
Oh, good.
So you're not alone.
There's no way that I can separate it from my, 12-year-old self.
Well, that's right? That's my...
And also one that I haven't rewatched in...
Yeah. So my 60-year-old self just probably didn't see the point.
I watch it constantly. Yeah. I want to be Mary Sanderson like no other.
Which one is Mary?
The...
Jessica,
Kathy, yes, or
you. Kathy and Jimmy. Thank you.
I mean... We all want to be Kathy and Jimmy.
Yeah.
So, well, they have now just come out on, I think, Disney Plus.
Yes.
Hocus Pocus 2. Uh-huh. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, interesting. For someone that's so fond of it.
I've been a little busy, Lisa. I've been just a little busy.
I started it the other night, and once I saw Sam Richardson and Gary Cole, or Tony Hale, I was like, great.
Oh, yeah, I like Tony Hale. I'm excited to see that. I will tell you this. This will surprise you. I will not be watching it.
Yes. What?
Yeah, it's true.
It's a modern take, though.
But, and I should pull this up on my computer here, they are coming up with a Hocus Pocus the Musical.
All right, here we go. Okay. Yeah. All right.
This will not surprise you. I will not be going to see it.
I don't think it's on my list.
It's going to be, in theory, directed by Kenny Ortega. Ooh. So that's pretty big.
Seems like his jam.
I'm very excited.
Anyway, it's rumored, but I think it's rumored that it's pretty much going to happen. Mm-hmm. Oops, and I just closed this, though. So, I do have to talk about this one thing. I don't know what the dates are specifically, but... Lincoln Center Encores was going to be doing a production of Light in the Piazza.
Ooh.
Starring.
I forgot.
Oh, no. Asian actor. She just was in big news last year about her accident and losing her child. I'm gonna
I feel awful that I don't know any actress that lost her child.
Big news accident in New York. I'm gonna have to bring up my theater.
Oh, wait a minute. The crosswalk. The crosswalk incident.
Oh my goodness.
What's her name? Okay, we're gonna come up with it. Anyway, it has been postponed. It came right back up, so nobody panic. It's Ruthie Ann Miles.
There you go.
God, that was hard. Being directed by Che Yu. And it's being done. I saw the original Light in the Piazza and
you didn't
hate it as much as Hocus Pocus, but did not like it. It was beautiful. I mean, the set and everything about it was gorgeous. I just didn't like the show or the music.
Gorgeous musical moments.
People like that.
Yeah, you know, my jam. Yeah, and Chickalella couldn't get enough of it. Oh gosh, you'll get her going on that.
Well,
one.
She's
Bring
Italian.
Up Lights in the Piazza. Yeah, so am I.
I know. Not my jam. Oh, okay. Anyway, it's moving to, I think, June because of some scheduling conflicts.
They're waiting for Back to the Future.
So,
roll on in the spring.
The reason why I had to mention that is because we're going to play a little bit of Light in the Piazza, and you can judge the music for yourself. This is Statue and Stories, one of the songs I like. That's why I'm playing it. We'll be right back.
There were princes, painters, noblemen of logic and art.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and...
Nicole.
And...
Amber.
And...
Kim Sissy.
And...
Callie.
Well, and now I don't have to reintroduce everybody.
Yes.
But we had such a great conversation, and I will. We talked with Amber Quick, Callie Sykes, and Kim Stacy, and they are here now in their official capacity as part of Morgan Theater Company's production of Matt and Ben, and we have the entire cast here.
Dun, dun, dun!
Just with Callie dreams. And Kim. And we have the director, Amber Quick.
Hello.
Amber, tell us about the show. What the heck is it? These names seem familiar somehow.
That's right. Matt and Ben is a two-person play written by Mindy Kaling and Brenda Withers. Mindy Kaling, whose credits I hope precede her name, but from we know her from The Office, we know her from The Mindy Project. She's an incredible writer, and Brenda has a long and impressive writing history as well. And the two of them wrote this two-person play, which they also performed off-Broadway.
Off-Broadway, mm-hmm.
That is about Matt Damon and Ben Affleck in 1994, and it poses the question of what if the script for Good Will Hunting magically fell from the sky and landed in their laps? And then for the next 72 minutes, hijinks and hilarity ensues. It's a really fun story. It feels like it pulls out all of the stops of storytelling. And at the heart, it's a really beautiful story about artistic collaboration and creative friendship. Egos and jealousy and all of these things. But then on the surface level, it is just a complete circus show.
Well, most of the world know Matt and Ben as male identified folks. Is there a reason why these two characters are played by female identified folks?
Absolutely. It's not, I feel like they don't handle it too overtly in the script, but I think that there's a lot to be said about the opportunities for two young white men who wrote a pretty dang good script, and then, 3 years later are on stage accepting their Oscar, and in the 90s, the opportunities that were available to young white men were far greater than those to, say, anyone else.
Anyone else, exactly.
Right.
And that's not true to this day, is it?
Not at all.
No, good. No. Good we've gotten past that.
Done. Fixed it.
Exactly.
Done. Fixed it.
Sigh of relief.
Okay. Kim, who do you play?
I play Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck. Okay. And tell me a little bit about the character.
I know. He's a little egotistical, but he's just a puppy. He's young. I mean, he's 22 when they were like writing this, and then we go when he's 16. So you get to just see this young adolescent boy who's just trying to figure his stuff out, but also he's just funny and charismatic, and people like him. Mm-hmm. And I mean, after doing my research, I was like, why? But for me, I'm finding that in my Ben, because this is not Ben Affleck, I'm sure he would argue with me. But in my Ben, he has those open eye qualities, that he wants to learn, he wants to be a part of stuff, but he's kind of a bull in a china shop.
Okay.
Doesn't understand what's going on, and he just messes things up.
I can totally relate to that. It makes sense.
I have no connection with him at all.
Exactly. Callie, by methods of deduction,
right?
I'm guessing you play Matt Damon.
I do play Matt Damon. I do. I think Matt Damon is like one of your actors
yes.
in the best and the worst way possible. Mm-hmm. We start to see that as the story progresses. Mm-hmm. He's a go-getter, and he works hard, and so he feels like he is entitled to a lot of things because he works so hard. But that's not necessarily how life works, especially when it comes to collaboration and getting places. So I think he has to learn. I think a part of the character arc is just like, are you really going to get that far on your own?
Yeah.
Or are you going to invest in the people around you as well?
So I have not seen it. I know nothing about it. I'm a blank slate.
Yes.
But I have seen the set as it's going up because it's happening at Ground Floor Theater. And it appears to me that I'm going to guess there's a lot of physical comedy in this. Am
Absolutely.
I right?
Just a lot of physicality in general. It is these two ladies to my right are working so beautifully and so hard and just pouring every ounce of energy that they have into it.
My body hurts so bad.
So tell me about the process a little bit. How have rehearsals been going? I mean, when you're dealing a lot with physical comedy, you've got all these different layers when you put together a show. And when you add physical comedy, that's something that doesn't happen all that often for most actors and directors, for that matter.
Right. Morgan Theater Company is, this is their inaugural performance.
Right. We're going to talk about that in a
Absolutely.
Second.
Absolutely. And we knew that we were going to be working on a very amended schedule. And so because I think we scheduled 12 days, 14 yeah, like, days yeah, of rehearsal and tech.
Just
and
like Christmas.
Everything. Just yeah. like Christmas.
Just like
14
Christmas.
Days of Christmas.
Loved it.
And so it was very important to all of us that we bring in Toby Miner, the incredible yeah. Toby Miner, yes. on day one. And the first thing that we did before table work, before blocking, before anything, was set those fights so that then every day leading up to opening night, we could be working. Oh, spoiler alert.
There
may be some fights.
Don't spoil.
So that we could be working those physical bits every day safely and slowly and safely so that by the time we get to opening, they're just breakneck and
yeah.
So
well, as you know, we always, when we look at producing theater and directing theater, we often bring fight choreographers in to just help us deal with the physical movement of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not necessarily for fist fighting,
right,
always.
Right,
so,
all of them.
So therefore, there's lots of opportunities mm-hmm. To do stuff. And how have y'all worked together before? And I'm talking to Callie and Kim.
We have not.
No.
And so how's that been going? Because you're playing
they
two
both
guys.
Started smiling pretty big.
They did.
We do have a history together. We've known each other. We met at Zach.
We've worked together, but right. not in a performance capacity. I saw Kim on stage at Zach and instantly fell in love with her. So I've been a big fan. So being able to work with her in
this
process
is the first time
amazing.
You've heard that?
No, and but every time it still makes me cry because I say the same thing about our entire team. It's like, yeah. I feel like I'm walking amongst giants. So when somebody says that I think is a giant, which Callie, I mean, hello, and Amber, and they say I'm equally a giant, I'm like, okay, I've got to call my mom and process this because I feel way too big for my head right now.
Well, that's great, and this is a two-hander, and mm-hmm. that only helps cement those
really,
bonds
it makes
during
a
company.
Yeah.
It's been beautiful to watch them work together because they just the way that they ebb and flow and then find that balance. It's just been so incredible to watch.
Really did find it like on our first stumble through, and we looked at each other and had an oh my gosh, okay, we can do this. It's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. Incredible.
That's awesome. Well, I am so looking forward to seeing it. Let's talk about Morgan Theater Company for a little while. This is the first show out of the gate.
That's right.
And this is a theater company started by Kyle Kirchhoff and Sarah Burke. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about? I want to acknowledge, Amber, that you are neither of those people.
That is correct. Yeah. I am not. Give me 15 minutes and I can do
I'm sure
I can
you
do
could.
My best.
But, no doubt. But tell I'll us about Morgan sir. Theater Company. Is this... you know, a lot of times people will put together a theater company for a production and then it goes away. Are there bigger plans beyond Matt and Ben?
There are bigger plans. This is sort of the first step into their lives as producers, and I'm so proud of the work that they've mm-hmm. done it's on this incredible. Show and Ismail Soto, who's our production designer, is also just an incredible addition to the team.
Oh my gosh, the details.
And I feel like Morgan Theater is they're bringing this new company to the community that is person first, uh-huh. person centered. Oh. And that was a main goal of this whole process mm-hmm. was treating ourselves as the humans that we are that need breaks and that need grace mm-hmm. and you know mm-hmm. that we show up with what we have and we make the best thing that we can with what we have mm-hmm. and at the end of the day that's beautiful work.
Yeah.
And it's been really incredible to get to walk that walk with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all yeah. about collaboration.
Yeah.
And that's what's beautiful about it.
And is that what they plan to move forward with?
Yes. I think you know, of course the goal is to get to the point with funding and capacity where they can do bigger shows and musicals, I think, are really the end goal.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So I see big things in their future.
Awesome.
Well, we'll be here on the ground floor.
There you go.
Exciting.
At the ground floor.
We will look forward to seeing more from Morgan. So that's all very, very exciting. Certainly, if this production is any evidence, as I've been watching, they work really hard and really long.
Yes. Oh, yes, they do. Yeah. They're passionate.
So tell us when Matt and Ben opens, how long it plays, showtimes, etc.?
We open this Thursday
tomorrow
and have two performances each evening at 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That's October 6th through 8th.
And that's it. And so after the 8th, we're done.
Folks. Yes. Yeah. Okay. And the show is running a tight 72 minutes, no intermission. We love it.
Yeah, we do love it. Yeah. Well, I cannot wait to see it. I'm going to rush away from my 72-minute show and get in the car and try to come and see it.
Our
schedules conflict.
Dueling.
Well, so thanks for coming. Have a great opening tomorrow night.
Yes.
And if you would like information, you can visit morgantheater.com.
That's true. I was going to get to that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No,
you were pushing. You looked like you were about to push a button.
I am.
He's going to do that,
but I was going to say that before, but that's good. I usually ask you to do it, and I didn't, so... thank you for pointing that out. thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
That was Amber Quick, Callie Sykes, and Kim Stacy of Morgan Theater Company's Matt and Ben playing the 6th through the 8th at Ground Floor Theater. For more information, morgantheater.com. And I sort of went for Goodwill Hunting. Mm. Hunting for my music choice. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. We just had a great talk with Amber Quick, who I believe is going to stick around with us for a little while.
I believe so.
And Callie Sykes and Kim Stacy. I just want to do real quick locally stuff. I want to just talk about Red Hot Patriot because I know they're not coming on the show. Austin Playhouse, they're reprising Red Hot Patriot, which they did
virtually
during the pandemic.
Now it's going to be in
real life. And that's the life and wit of Molly Ivins.
Starring one Cindy Williams.
And to critical acclaim as best we can.
Yes.
So you can get information about that at austinplayhouse.com. It plays October 14th and 15th. Only two chances to see it.
Well, there's three shows. There's two on Monday.
Yeah, but the 14th and 15th.
Yeah, 2 days, three shows.
Yeah. Okay. What's playing right now still is The Outsider. We had them on the show last week, I believe. It plays through the 16th of October. Shining City, we had on a couple of weeks ago. That's different stages at the Trinity Street Theater. It closes at the end of the weekend on the 9th. The Pact, starring Lisa Sheps.
I was like, one Lisa Sheps?
No, it's an ensemble piece. I'm just one person of it. Jarrett Productions, that's playing at the Vortex, and that plays through the 15th. Again, it's a tight 72. It's actually probably a tight 70. Hamlet, Prince of Denmark, is still playing over at Richard Garriott's.
The Curtain Theater.
Curtain Theater, thank you. And that's the Baron's Men. It plays till the 22nd. Over at the Scottish Rite till, I'm guessing, the 30th. I wrote October 390th.
That's a new day.
I don't know, but look it up. It's Rosita and Conchita at the Scottish Rite. Now we'll just rush right into, as I stall because I don't have my computer on, today in theater history.
Dun 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 dun. Stuff happened.
Dun 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 dun.
Lisa gonna tell us.
Gonna get there eventually.
About the stuff that happened.
Yeah. There it is. History. Why didn't I just see that?
Theater history.
All right. On this date, October 5th in 2008, the play 13. Jason Robert Brown's.
Oh, that was where Ariana Grande got her debut.
And
before
we just
she
talked
was
about
known
this
as
recently.
The Ariana Grande.
Because it has a movie now, which I've seen.
It has a movie. Mm-hmm.
Bloomer Girl opened in 1944.
About a girl in her bloomers?
I believe it was. It's at the Salmon... I can't... Because it's really small. I thought it said Sam and Schubert Theater, but it's the Sam S. Schubert Theater.
Oh, full-namer.
Jenna Russell's birthday. I don't really know who that is, I have to say. Do you?
No.
No, okay. But it's her birthday.
So. I could see her and then go, oh, but wait, I do.
Also the birthday of Heather Headley.
Oh, yes, I like it.
Christiane Knoll and one Glynis Johns.
Like
Glynis Johns. Uh-huh. I like the Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
In 1955, The Diary of Anne Frank opened. For those of you who are interested, there is a reference to the Diary of Anne Frank in a show called The Pact. Just saying. In 2014, The Curious Incident of the Dog and the Nighttime, which was also done at Zach Theater a few years
seems
back.
So much longer ago, and it wasn't.
It does. Beckett opened in 1960. And finally, the 2006 revival of a little show called A Chorus Line also opened on
which played at the Schubert.
Which played at the Schubert.
So I was there on that final night.
We're going to take a break and talk to our next guests. And of course, in honor of A Chorus Line and of Nicole Shiro, who loves that show.
I love that show.
We're going to play. We're going to play I Can Do That from the 2006 revival of A Chorus Line. We'll be right back.
I'm watching Cisco Peter Pat.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. And now Amber's joining us.
I was like, don't forget I got Amber's.
Reach in there and say hello.
I'm back. I'm still here. You can't get rid of me.
Yep, can't get rid of you.
I feel like I have to meet her in the middle with this microphone because that's going to put your back out, not a chorus line.
Exactly. They are of different heights. So let's introduce our next guests from the Gaslight Baker Theater in Lockhart, Texas, home of... Oh, God, what's the name of that movie? I'm going to come
waiting
up with
Waiting for Guffman.
Waiting for Guffman. Thank you. That's the movie.
Stools. And Bernie.
And Bernie.
Oh, and
true.
Bernie.
Well, Bernie was all over the place. Anyway, let me introduce you first. We have Andrea Littlefield. Hi, Andrea.
Hello.
Who is directing this piece. And two of the actors, Stephen Cruiser.
Hello.
Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes,
Cruiser. Cruiser. I just guessed. And Cynthia Cruiser.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I'm so thrilled to have y'all on the show. It's not often we get Gaslight on, and I think Gaslight's only in our 15 years. This is probably the third appearance of Gaslight on,
wow.
The, on the show.
Well,
so,
thank you for having us.
We did some Zooms during the pandemic.
We may have done some Zooms.
Yeah, but like in person.
Yep.
Kind of exciting.
Yeah.
So, Andrea, Blithe Spirit by Noel Coward.
With a twist.
With a twist?
Yes.
Oh, what do you mean?
We are doing it in grayscale.
Okay.
So the stage, the costumes, the makeup, all in grayscale.
You're doing it black and white.
We are.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
With
well, that's how I see.
Some surprise colors.
Okay. Okay.
First of all, I love Noel Coward. And second of all, I love this idea of the grayscale. That's cool. Amber and I both,
It is beautiful.
So tell us about, what's the story?
So the story is that Charles Condamine is a writer, and he is writing a book about a mad, what is Madame Moriarty?
A medium.
Medium.
A
you.
Mad
a
medium.
A mad medium. Psychic. And so he invites Madame Moriarty from the village to come do a seance so he can get some tricks of the trade. They can't be alone, so they have to invite another couple to participate in the seance. So we have Dr. and Mrs. Bradman joining them, and we have Edith, who is their housemaid. So it's a small cast, ensemble cast, really fun language. You know, it's from the
30s. Well, it's Noel Coward.
I know, I know. Some, you know, special effects, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun and great cast, great actors. So, Stephen and Cynthia are married in real life and playing Ruth and Charles.
No, I thought maybe the last name was just coincidental.
Yeah. So, our
Cynthia,
brother and sister.
Yeah. You are playing Ruth. Tell us about Ruth. What's her gig?
Ruth is very helpful. She's a bit severe. You might call her a control freak. She likes everything just so. And of course, she wants to support her husband in all of her endeavors because what woman wouldn't?
Of course. And Stephen, you're playing Chuck?
Yes, Charles.
I call
That's
him Chuck.
That's fine. You can call him that. Yeah. Yeah, he is a writer. He has been, I don't know, it's similar to me. I feel he wants to be the host and kind of the life of the room. And he does have a good relationship with his wife, obviously, as I do with mine, I hope. But but he's also looking for ideas, looking for inspiration, so wherever he can get it.
He's also a man. of the 30s.
Yes.
He so is a man really of the 30s. That really comes across. That is true.
That, to me, is not necessarily a compliment.
No, not in that regard.
No, there are.
I don't think anyone was meaning it. No.
He's a bit of a cad.
Yeah, you're a bit of a cad. That's true. Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful show. I was, I think I was telling Amber before we went on the air, I did Blythe Spirit in 1975. Nice. I was in high school at the time, and I was not in it, but I was the props master and the sound designer.
Well, that could be fun for the show.
And I thought, I thought for sure that I had the script, and I went digging through all my books because I was going to show you my Blythe Spirit script from 1975. But alas, it wasn't there. But it's a beautiful piece. Is it? I know that you're doing it in grayscale and black and white. Can I assume that you are keeping it in its period of the 1930s?
Yes, it's all period.
And is it taking place across the pond or
it
here?
It is.
Wonderful.
The Condamine's house in Kent.
In Kent.
And
I love
so
Kent.
People
I used
will
to smoke
have...
those.
You are really on fuego today.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, that's lovely. I know that when we originally emailed each other, you were going to bring the whole crew, and unfortunately, we're not able to do that because of COVID protocols. But you were going to do a little scene. Are we still going to do a little scene?
Yes.
Oh, great!
That's why I brought these two.
Wonderful.
So they can
well,
do, a scene.
Do you want to set that scene up for us?
Sure. So this is at the very beginning of the play, and they are preparing for the arrival of the Bradmans and eventually Madame Arcardi, and just having some discussion about Charles's writing habits and the way that he thinks of things. And I'll just let Ruth and Charles do the scene.
Wonderful. Well, this is Stephen Cruiser and Cynthia Cruiser doing a scene from Gaslight Baker's production of Blythe Spirit.
Used Elvira be a help to you? When you were thinking something out, I mean.
Every now and then, when she concentrated, but she didn't concentrate very often.
I do wish I'd known her.
I wonder if you'd have liked her.
I'm sure I should. As you speak of her, she sounds enchanting. Yes, I'm sure I should, because, you know, I have never for an instant felt in the least jealous of her. That's a good sign.
Poor Elvira.
Does it still hurt when you think of her?
No, not really. Sometimes I almost wish it did. I feel rather guilty.
I wonder if I died, how long it'd be before you forgot me.
What a horrible thing to say.
No, I think it's interesting.
Well, to begin with, I haven't forgotten Elvira. I remember her very distinctly indeed. I remember how fascinating she was, and how maddening. I remember how badly she played all games, and how cross she got when she didn't win. I remember her gay charm when she had achieved her own way over something, and her extreme acidity when she didn't. I remember her physical attractiveness, which was tremendous, and her spiritual integrity, which was nil.
You can't remember something that was nil?
I remember how morally untidy she was.
Was she more physically attractive than I am?
That was a very tiresome question, dear, and fully deserves the wrong answer.
You really are very sweet.
Thank you.
And a little naive, too.
Why?
Because you imagine that I mind about Elvira being more physically attractive than I am.
I should have thought any woman would mind, if it were true. Or perhaps I'm old-fashioned in my view of female psychology.
Not old-fashioned, darling, just a bit didactic.
How do you mean?
Well, it's didactic to attribute to one type the defects of another type. For example, because you know perfectly well that Elvira would mind terribly if you found another woman more physically attractive than she was, doesn't necessarily follow that I should. It's all a matter of degree.
I love you, my love.
I know you do, but not the wildest stretch of the imagination could call it the first fine careless rapture.
Would you like it to be?
Good God, no.
Wasn't that a shade too vehement?
We're neither of us adolescent, Charles. We've neither of us led exactly prim lives, have we? We've both been married before. Careless rapture at this stage would be incongruous and embarrassing.
I hope I haven't been in any way a disappointment, dear.
Oh, don't be so idiotic.
After all, your first husband was a great deal older than you, wasn't he? I shouldn't like you to think that you'd missed out all along the line.
There are moments, Charles, when you go too far.
Sorry, darling.
As far as waspish female psychology goes, there's a rather strong vein of it in you.
I've heard that said about Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar is neither here nor there.
He may be, for all we know. We'll ask Madame Arcardi.
You're awfully irritating when you're determined to be witty at all costs, almost supercilious.
That's exactly what Elvira used to say.
I'm not at all surprised, physically triumphant as she was, that she was entirely lacking in perception.
Darling Ruth.
There you go again.
As I think I mentioned before, I love you, my love.
Poor Elvira.
Didn't that light, comradely kiss mollify you at all?
You're really annoying. You know you are. When I said poor Elvira, I meant it from the heart. You must have bewildered her so horribly.
Don't I ever bewilder you at all?
Never for an instant. I know every trick.
Well, all I can say is that we'd better get a divorce immediately.
Put my glass down, there's a darling.
She certainly had a great talent for living. It was a pity that she died so young.
Poor Elvira.
That remark is getting monotonous.
Oh, poor Charles, then.
That's better.
And later on, poor Ruth, I expect.
You have no faith, Ruth. I really do think you should try to have a little faith.
I shall strain every nerve.
Life without faith is an arid business.
How beautifully you put things, dear.
I aim to please.
And if I died, I wonder how long it would be before you married again.
You won't die. You're not the dying sort.
Neither was Elvira.
Oh, yes, she was. Now that I look back on it, she had a certain ethereal, not quite of this world quality. Nobody could call you, even remotely, ethereal.
Nonsense. She was of the earth, earthy.
Well, she is now, anyhow.
You know, that's the sort of observation that shocks people.
It's discouraging to think how many people are shocked by honesty and how few by deceit.
Write that down. You might forget it.
Awesome. That was wonderful. I do love his turn of phrase. It's so much fun. And I do like the song, Elvira. Elvira. Sorry.
I was trying to make an Elvira.
Yeah, it didn't really work. They can't all be great. Well, that is amazing. So tell us when the show opens.
Friday.
So really soon. Friday.
And how long do you play?
Three weekends
through the 24th?
Well, actually, through the 22nd.
22nd. We have two shows on the 22nd.
Okay. Well, wonderful. I had written it down wrong. And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
They can visit the website for Gaslight Baker at www.mygbt.org.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
Wonderful. That was Andrea Littlefield, Stephen Cruiser, and Cynthia Cruiser of Gaslight Baker Theater's production of Blithe Spirit, playing the 7th. That's this Friday through the 22nd. For more information, mygbt.org. This is from Anne of Green Gables. It's called Kindred Spirits. We'll be right back.
Kindred spirits, I knew it from the start.
You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa, Nicole, and Amber. Yeah, except I had your microphone.
You can't get rid of me.
Well, we just have we have like 2 minutes that we could talk about anything we want to talk about. Amber, is there anything you want to talk about?
Well, we just put it together that Nicole played Morales in A Chorus Line, and I played Sheila in A Chorus Line. So now I'm...
Oh, and I've seen A Chorus Line.
And you've seen A Chorus Line.
Yes.
So we're basically...
Chorus Line sisters.
A Chorus Line, yeah.
You played Sheila?
Yes.
That's funny.
That's what I get to thank my back injury for.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, that's good because it is there's a lot of physicality. And I was the
genius that demanded that my Sheila dance on 3-inch heels. I kind of did it to myself.
True, true, true.
All you ever needed was the music and the mirror.
That's right.
And the chance to dance.
I have told this on this show so many times that it doesn't really bear repeating, but I've only seen Chorus Line once. I saw it on Broadway. I saw it towards the end of its run. So I moved to New York in 77. I think it opened in 72 or 74 or something like that. So it was relatively new when I got there. It closed with 20 years anyway, but I saw it at the end of its run, and boy, was it a tired production.
Oh,
it was such a tired production. But I'm looking forward to seeing another version of it sometime soon. I want the
Antonio Banderas version, right?
Or the concert, the thing that there's a tour of it right now. I'd like to go see that.
Well, why hasn't it coming to Texas?
No say. I don't know.
I've got a problem with that.
I have many problems with that, but it's a beautiful piece. And of course, I think I've mentioned also on the show that I knew several of the people that were part of that original Michael Bennett group that started.
I think that's what's so special is it really is artists' words and feelings
is.
And stories. And I mean, it really just is. And that's just really
But what I love, actually, a very dear friend of mine, Andy Bew, who was part of those original meetings that he had in his apartment. And he was actually, he was never in the show. His story isn't really portrayed in the show. But at the beginning of the show, somebody says that they don't want to do it. They want to go and be a director or a stage manager. And that was Andy. And
I love it.
And so I've also known Wayne Cilento as a friend of mine, but Andy was the one I was closest with. And it always made me feel kind of special being close to those people that were in that room with Michael Bennett as those tape recorders were turning.
Just a great, great, great moment.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, though, I'm just having the greatest moment of gratitude. This is my first time back in the studio with the two of you years. We've done some Zoom things, but I just have so much love for the two of you and co-op. I'm just thrilled to be here.
Love you too.
We love having you on. And we've got John Hoffner, who is like chomping.